United States versus Alvarado Tizoc and others.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Pablo DiCastro. I represent Mr. Alvarado Tizoc, one of three co-defendants. As you know from reading the briefs, the issues here really come down to the quantity and the type of controlled substance for which these individuals should be held accountable. Starting with the evidence that was actually presented at the sentencing hearing, you have 800 grams of a substance that everybody believed was heroin that was actually transacted by these individuals to an individual named Derek Campbell, who then passed it to other individuals, who then mixed it with other substances to create much larger volume, which is one issue. Another issue is that what they've all believed was heroin, some of it turned out to be fentanyl. And another issue that is unique to my client and not to the others is that to all of this, the government thought to add, and the court accepted the argument to add, 8 kilos of heroin and 2 kilos of cocaine that were transacted in an earlier time period, what they referred to as the spring of 2005. This was a time period when, according to my client's version, he was in the Chicago area associating with an individual who was admittedly a co-conspirator with his brother, that my client was in the Chicago area selling marijuana during this time period, that this other individual, Lugardo Chavez, became a cooperator and told the government that he was in business with a person named Moreno, who was my client's brother. The government then concludes that because Moreno was my client's brother, then my client must have been involved in that business too. The court in the lower court actually asked the government, other than this common sense argument, do you have anything else? And they said, no, that's what we have. We have Lugardo Chavez and the fact that it just seems to make sense. Having heard that question during the sentencing argument, I actually thought the court was appropriately skeptical. The court then went on and decided that that was enough after all, that this common sense argument was enough. It's our position here that it's not enough, that that finding was unsupported by the evidence. With respect to whether these defendants should be held accountable for the quantity that resulted after these other co-conspirators mixed the substance up to a drastically higher amount, we've briefed this issue extensively. You've got a lot of cases regarding scope, the scope of the conspiracy, the buyer-seller relationship. What actually happened factually here is that my client and Mr. Duran sold in 5 different transactions a total of 800 grams of a substance to a Derek Campbell, who then gave it to these other individuals who then mixed it up according to their own formula. They decided by experimentation with users in the projects and based on some marketing statements made by Campbell that it could be mixed up to 10 times. There's no evidence that these defendants, none of them, had any idea that it could be mixed that much or that it would be mixed that much. And in addition to all the cases that were cited, I would draw the court's attention, particularly with this issue, to Soto Pierda and the Hernandez case. Hernandez being the second co-defendant.
Well, you're not objecting, are you, to an enhancement for high purity drugs or very strong drugs?
An enhancement is one thing. This is not what happened here.
They're closely related, right? Because the point of the drugs that are very strong is that they're going to result in more doses of drugs being sold.
But to do the guideline calculation on the basis of the 800 grams and then decide it should go up a little because it was very strong is very different than saying we should do the guideline calculation based on the mixed up amount, even though they didn't know how much it would be mixed. The fact that my client admitted in his proffer, after 5 hours of questioning, that he had some idea that buyers could mix up wholesale quantities.
Okay, so then the question, then the judge has to make an estimate of how many extra doses you get as a result of this strong drug.
He also has to make a decision whether or not that activity is part of the scope of my client's conspiracy.
Look, you admit there's an enhancement for very strong drugs. The base of the enhancement is twofold. One is that they can be very dangerous. The other is that they result in more doses, more drug distribution, right?
Well, Your Honor, looking at the Sotopiedra case,
it is appropriate to have an enhancement because of those characteristics of strong drugs. Are you disagreeing with me?
Well, perhaps there should be some enhancement, but...
Do you agree or disagree?
Your Honor...
You answer my question.
I agree that it may be appropriate to have some enhancement. I don't agree that the enhancements that were decided in this
case... Well, what do you propose as a better enhancement?
Do the guideline calculation on the 800 grams.
What do you propose as a better enhancement?
Well, that's what I'm getting at. If you went through the guideline calculation on the quantity that I was actually delivered and then provide for some enhancement beyond that...
Yes, and how do you calculate that enhancement?
Well, you know, that would be something that the court would have to discuss at sentencing and listen to the evidence.
Now, that's not an answer. I'm asking you, how should the court do it?
In this particular case, Your Honor, I would argue as my client's lawyer that it shouldn't do it. I understand that that may be something.
Why shouldn't it?
Because it's beyond the scope of his agreement. He conspired to sell one substance.
No, you're missing the point.
I mean, the scope of the agreement may be an issue in some cases, but this is just a question of, do you take into account what happens at the retail level, and everybody knows that drugs are going to be cut and redistributed.
Sure.
If
it happens in every case. If everybody knows that it happens and it happens in every case, why is it only being held against these individuals in this case? Why not in every case?
Well, the stronger the drug is, the more drug distribution there's going to be.
But there was no indication that our clients actually knew it was stronger. They knew that it was preferred by their buyer.
That's a separate question where they have to know it's stronger. That's separate.
Your question.
I'm asking you, what better method of calculating enhancement for a super strong drug than figuring out how many doses it's going to produce relative to the doses that would be produced by a weaker drug? And if it would be 10 times as many doses, then you'd want a substantial enhancement.
Ron, as I said, I think that question presupposes that they knew exactly how strong this was.
No, it doesn't. That's a separate question, what they know.
Well,
right?
Your Honor, the question then is what enhancement should apply? And my answer is, I don't know what enhancement should apply.
Well, I'm telling you what should apply. It should be, look at the additional doses that you get as a result of having the very strong drug. If you have 10 times as many doses, there should be a substantial enhancement.
That may be a logical way to go about it. That's not what happened in this case. That's not what the court said. And if the case were remanded with instructions that would be permissible, then maybe we might end up at the same result, and it might seem that we've wasted a lot of time, but we've clarified a point.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you, Mr. DeCastro. So, Mr. Shannon?
Thank you, Your Honor. Stephen Shannon, on behalf of, I'm standing up for Joseph Lopez, who represented Noe Duran. I've been appointed to represent and represented at the...
Which one do you represent?
Noe Duran.
Noe?
The
young one?
That's correct, Your Honor. I'm stepping up for Joseph Lopez. I was appointed to represent Mr. Antonio Duran, my associate, Molly Armour, who was also appointed to represent Mr. Antonio Duran, the father, will be arguing on behalf of that defendant.
And Noe is the one who nearly died from this drug.
That's correct, Your Honor.
At what point in the stage of sale did they discover that this was a pretty bad drug? Was it when he almost died?
I cannot answer that, Your Honor.
I'm curious because obviously this... The other question I'd have is when they're selling regular... Is there such thing as regular heroin as opposed to this?
I believe there is, Your Honor. Synthetic heroin.
Had they sold any of that?
I believe there was some actual heroin sold, Your Honor.
Okay. And was there a difference in price between the regular heroin and this one?
I cannot answer that. I don't remember, Your Honor.
I thought I saw something where this would have been more... They would have been selling this for a higher price than you would
at
normally.
The end sale.
Find out until it was all almost over, huh?
That's correct, Your Honor. I believe that's correct.
Otherwise, they're just... selling something, they think it's silver and it's really gold, huh?
I think that's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Mr. Lopez, in his brief, and I'll stand on his brief, just mentions that the judge didn't adequately, Judge Kendall, didn't adequately articulate Mr. Lopez's request for leniency based upon Mr. Noe Duran's lifetime drug addiction. She acknowledged that she had read it and understood the argument, but did not address it further than that. I believe that's a substance mm-hmm. of Mr. Lopez's argument.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Shannon.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Armour?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Molly Armour on behalf of Mr. Antonio Duran. The issue before you today with regard to Mr. Antonio Duran is a district court's clear error in failing to make the necessary findings for relevant conduct liability under the sentencing guideline 1B1.3 as to both the scope of Mr. Duran's agreement and what was reasonably foreseeable to him in context of that scope. Given this court's clear ruling in United States v. Salem.
Isn't this the purity issue or the strength issue just in another way of looking at it?
No, Your Honor. I don't believe it is. I actually think that the issue here is the insufficiency of the findings about what Mr. Duran can be held responsible for at its very base level.
Well, he can be given enhancement because of the number of doses that this stuff produces.
What I understand, Your Honor, is that he can be given an enhancement if that flows from his relevant conduct, if it flows from his responsibility here. Mr. Duran,
I understand.
From the outset.
He's selling this stuff, right?
He's selling it wholesale,
yeah,
not retail.
Yeah, he's selling it wholesale, but he's selling a very strong drug. which translates into a lot of doses. So he can be given an enhancement for that, right? And wouldn't that be the same thing as what the judge did?
Well, I would make a distinction, Your Honor. The scope of his agreement inside of this conspiracy was to wholesale distribute heroin. He had nothing to do with the retail distribution.
That doesn't matter. Look, if what he's distributing is so potent that it results in a larger sale and consumption of drugs at the retail level, he can be punished for that. The guidelines are full of stuff about how the more potent drugs are treated more severely for sentencing purposes.
Well, if this was an enhancement issue, then I think that's something the district court could deal with on remand. But that doesn't help the fact that the record is absent with regard to the scope of his involvement and the clear finding of the court.
He's not supposed to, you can't expect him to know that there will be retail distribution.
Well, it's not about knowledge. Hmm? It's not about knowledge. As this court clearly said in United States v. Salem, knowledge does not equal criminal culpability. Okay, knowledge is simply knowledge. What we're talking about here is the issue of scope, the scope of his involvement, and that is the initial benchmark by which we must begin this analysis. What did he agree to, and what was reasonably foreseeable to him flowing out of that agreement? And so all of these issues regarding the purity of the drug deal with what we argue involvement that he did not have. Knowledge does not become agreement.
Were they getting paid more?
On the knowledge, isn't
it? I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Were they getting paid more for this than regular heroin?
From my recollection of the record, no. They were selling it for the same amount of weight. What eventually came to be found out was that this wasn't synthetic heroin and that it was much stronger, but that was not something, and I think this is undisputed in the record, that he was aware of and that any of the co-defendants were aware of.
Noe is... his son, right?
Noe is his son.
Yeah, and you know, he got him hooked at about 11, is that right?
Yeah. He had drug addiction issues very early, from my understanding.
What drugs was he taking at some point? Did it change where he took this one and found out this really knocks you down?
You know what? I don't really know what about Noe's drug history so much, so I don't feel comfortable commenting on that.
I just thought maybe his father would know. But maybe he didn't tell you.
Perhaps he did. Perhaps I don't. Okay. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Ms. Armour. Ms. Kim?
Good morning. May it please the Court, Nicole Kim for the United States. The district court's findings in this case, particularly under a plain error standard, were sufficient to determine the defendant's scope or the scope of the defendant's jointly undertaking criminal activity.
The judge handled it correctly. The significance of the very potent drug has two significances. One, it's dangerous. People take an overdose and die. The other is that it is just really a larger quantity, right? The stronger it is, the more retail product it produces. So why not just adjust the sentence in recognition of the fact it's a dangerous drug and it produces more sales at the retail level?
I think based on the record, Your Honor, the district court took that into consideration when it was making specific findings about Alvarado and Antonio Duran's involvement in specific drug transactions. And those findings with respect to those transactions were essentially findings of their conspiratorial agreement, which included...
Now, I don't understand why you get into the conspiracy business. What difference does it make? The significance of these retail sales is that because it's a powerful drug, it requires more dilution, right? And so, of course, the defendant should be punished more heavily for that. But why get into the business where they're conspiring with the retail dealers? That's irrelevant.
Well, it was an issue that was raised by defendants Alvarado and Antonio Duran that...
Whatever's raised it, I'm not sure you understand, don't you? There are two problems with these powerful drugs. One is the possibility of killing people from overdoses, and the other is the fact that it's really more drugs. The more powerful it is, the more doses at the retail level that translates into. So the straightforward way to deal with it is for the judge to make an enhancement in recognition of its greater dangerousness and the fact that it is a larger quantity, right?
Yes,
more powerful means larger because it's going to be cut in order to provide the retail doses.
That's exactly what the district court found with respect to Alvarado and Antonio Duran's cases. And when you look at the guideline calculations that were made for each drug that the defendants were responsible for, there was a separate amount for heroin. It was approximately 3,000 kilos. I'm sorry, I believe it was 3,000 grams. And then also a separate amount that they were held culpable for, which was fentanyl, which is a little over 8 kilograms of fentanyl. So those amounts were included in their guidelines calculations, and they were ultimately held accountable for that. The issue of the scope of the conspiracy, it's the government's argument.
But what difference does it make whether the defendants conspire with retailers to distribute these drugs or simply know that the drugs are going to be distributed in diluted form?
In this case, Your Honor, I don't think there's a difference because both cases applied, like both scenarios applied. It was part of their conspiracy to distribute this drug, and that's exactly what it happened to be. The end result was that it was fentanyl, a larger amount of this powerful form of heroin. So both of those cases applied to both defendants. With respect to...
Aren't you doing double counting? Forget about the dangerousness aspect of the fentanyl. So the significance of fentanyl is that because it's more concentrated, more powerful, whatever, it has to be diluted more so you get more doses. So that's why there's the heavier guideline punishment for fentanyl. But if you punish the defendants at that higher guideline level because fentanyl results in a larger number of retail doses, and then you go and say, well, in addition, they had a conspiracy to distribute this thing at retail, and therefore you're going to add all that retail distribution to their criminal activity, then you're doing the same thing. You're using the dilution twice.
I don't think there was double counting in this case, Your Honor, and I say that because the heroin
doses at the retail level is a function of the power of fentanyl. And because fentanyl is more powerful, it has a higher guideline level. Well, if you've counted its higher guideline, once you've applied the higher guideline level, you have reflected the fact that fentanyl produces more drugs at the retail level. And then to go on and have a conspiracy and say, well, this is the amount of drugs they distributed, it's doing the same thing twice, isn't it?
But the defendants were responsible for the distribution of other types of drugs in addition to fentanyl in this case. There was evidence that they fronted marijuana to Noe Duran and Derek Campbell from approximately the fall of 2005 to the spring.
I can understand that. I'm just worried about the possibility that the judge counted the fentanyl twice, in effect.
I don't
believe... Because it magnified the number of doses, but before you start counting doses, you have the higher guideline.
I don't believe she did, because when the fentanyl calculation was made from the original amount of heroin, it was the fentanyl amount that was held attributable to the defendants, and just the fentanyl. It wasn't added in addition to the original heroin amount. The separate heroin transactions that they were held responsible for were never calculated as fentanyl. So I believe there wasn't double counting in that instance.
Is fentanyl the only super strong drug involved in the case?
In this particular case, yes. There was evidence of cocaine fronting and marijuana fronting, but fentanyl was the more powerful form of heroin.
Now, what about the argument that they didn't know it was fentanyl?
Well, Your Honor, I believe the evidence in the record points to the contrary. For example...
But do you regard it as a requirement that they know it's fentanyl?
No, Your Honor. I believe that what they needed to know was that this was a very powerful form of heroin that needed to be diluted and could be diluted for further street-level distribution, not necessarily that it was a specific kind of stronger opiate.
Actually sure why you want to concede that they have to know it's super strong. Why do you concede that?
Well, Your Honor, I didn't mean to concede that.
No, there are criminal liabilities for legitimate drug manufacturers and distributors who distribute an adulterated product even though they didn't know it. Similarly, you'd think that you'd want to place on these drug dealers the responsibility of determining the strength of what they buy, rather than just turn around and sell a lethal dose without inquiry.
I understand what you're saying. Let me clarify what I just said. I do believe they knew it was a powerful form of heroin, and in fact, they also knew it was fentanyl. There's evidence in the record that...
I know. You say that. I just don't know why. What if they buy stuff, they think it's regular heroin, but it's lethal fentanyl. They sell it, people die. Why wouldn't they be liable for that? Why don't you want to put on them the burden of discovering what it is they're selling, rather than just turning around this illegal product and selling it without knowing whether they're selling a lethal dose or a safe dose?
Well, Your Honor, they could be held culpable in the example that you're giving, that knowledge of drug type and quantity is not an element of the offense that they were charged with. So
what I was thinking. It wasn't, yeah. Right.
So although the knowledge isn't necessary, in this particular case, they had knowledge that it was fentanyl.
Right.
I just wanted to go back very quickly to Alvarado's involvement in the heroin and cocaine trafficking in the spring of 2005 on behalf of the Mexican drug trafficking organization. There was evidence in the record that came from this witness, Chavez, but the district court didn't just consider Chavez's statements in a vacuum. It had Other corroborating evidence, such as wiretap calls between Alvarado and Chavez, indicating that Alvarado knew that his brother Moreno was involved in heroin trafficking on behalf of the organization. And also another recorded call between Alvarado and Chavez it was a recorded call between Alvarado and his brother where Alvarado says, hey, I have this bad heroin that I got from you and I need to return it. So it wasn't, the district court wasn't focusing solely on Chavez's statements. There were other corroborating evidence in the record showing that Alvarado was responsible for those transactions.
Armour made the point that the wholesaler's knowledge of what the retailers are up to, knowledge is not enough in that context. You've got to have an agreement, a criminal agreement, in addition, or to implement the knowledge. What do you have to say to that?
Well, Your Honor, that's correct. Knowledge alone is not sufficient. But in this case, the specific transactions that the defendants were involved in had all the hallmarks of a conspiracy. There were significant amount of drugs that were fronted. There was a significant amount of money that they expected to get back from the street-level distributors. There was that evidence, the relationship of trust, and also showed that Alvarado and Antonio Duran had a vested interest in the street-level distribution of fentanyl as well as its dilution because it could be stretched more, could be sold for more money, and more money would be going back to them. With respect to Noe Duran's mitigation arguments, the district court properly considered all of those arguments at sentencing. It noted his lack of education, his near-death overdose, as well as the poor role model that he had in his father, who was co-defendant Antonio Duran. But the court also noted some aggravating factors that worked against Noe Duran, including the fact that after his overdose, he continued to sell drugs. And with respect to the lack of educational opportunities, he didn't take advantage of them as another member of his family had. And also the particular aggravating factor was that he admitted to transporting heroin in the body cavities of women.
Yeah, it's pretty clear. Yeah.
So
I have to dwell on that further.
Thank you, Your Honor. Unless the court has any further questions, I'll ask that you affirm the defendant's sentences.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Kim. So do the defendants have anything further they'd like to say? No? Okay, well, thank you very much. And I gather all but Mr. DiCastro were appointed. So we thank you very much, but we also thank Mr. DiCastro. No, he wasn't. You were appointed as well? Oh, okay. Sorry.